Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome back to Love Yourself Fiercely. I'm super excited to introduce today's guest. Not only is she a fellow self-publisher, but she's kind of a badass. So I am excited to introduce Paula Jean Ferry. Paula has always been in love with books, even before she learned to read. Once she learned how, there was no turning back. She read so much growing up that she was once grounded from books for an entire summer during middle school. In her senior year of high school, Paula started making noises. At 24, she was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. This has given her a unique perspective that she wants to share with the world. She currently resides in Southern Utah with her family and her two kitty cats. In addition to reading and writing, Paula loves singing and dancing in almost every genre. She loves being in and watching theater productions, especially musical performances. And she's usually up for most activities as long as it involves people. And I'm obsessed with all of her book names: Awkwardly Strong, Tragically Strong, Fearfully Strong, Hard Earned Lessons Learned. Paula, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so stoked. You know, in our screening interview, I talked to you a little bit about the power of you sharing your story and the power that it has for women all over who are navigating any type of disorder, as well as a lot of moms who are listening to this, who are learning to understand their own children within their disorders. So I'm really, really excited to hear your perspective and how you kind of navigated getting a diagnosis in your adult life and it surfacing in your teens, because that's typically out of the ordinary for Tourette's. Is that true?
Correct. It statistically will happen most often between the ages of 4 and 6. The DSMV, which is what doctors use for like official diagnoses, says onset before age 18. But it's definitely very, very rare to start in your teenage years, especially as late in your teenage years as I did.
So walk us through that, right? This is a self-love podcast, and I always have my guests kind of share their evolution, their self-discovery process. And for you, I think that looks a little different than the average story that we hear. So I would love to hear, in your words, your story.
So my senior year of high school, when these started to develop, I was working at our public library, and I was at work, and I made this weird little noise, and I just went, ooh, that was a weird hiccup. It didn't hurt like normal hiccups, but okay. And then I started noticing that I was doing them every day. And then I started noticing that I'm doing them multiple times per day. And then they started to jump into sets of two. I would do it twice. And then I would do it 3 times. I think once I did it 4 times, and that was kind of my, what is happening here? Like, is this going to be like, am I going to just start doing this constantly? Like, what is happening? By the time that hit, I was actually in college. I was a music major at the time, and that's when they started to fluctuate in rhythm and pitch, and it was actually super fascinating to see all of the different changes. I have a type of Tourette syndrome called echolalia, where I repeat and echo different sounds that I hear. So there was one job where I was working, I was sitting fairly close to the time clock, and anytime someone would punch in, the clock would go beep, beep, beep. And then I would do this also super high-pitched beep, 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 way higher than that, because I actually cannot imitate these noises. Like, I make them, but I don't know how. But because they started out so small and so subtle, like, I just thought they were hiccups for years. They didn't bother me. They didn't hurt like normal hiccups. It was more my parents that were concerned. And I saw 3 or 4 different doctors who had no idea what was going on. One said, something has to be spasming. We should get you some muscle relaxant, see if that helps, which it didn't. I still made noises. One asked me to, like, okay, what do these sounds sound like? Go ahead and do one. And I'm like, can't do them on command. Like, they just kind of pop out when they want to. He says, well, then I can't do anything about it. Sorry, bye. So, I mean, you're going to get like a wide range of spectrum, but I was also seeing doctors. I saw like our general practitioner. I saw an ENT, an ear, nose, throat doctor. I saw the doctor that had diagnosed my mom with thyroid cancer. It wasn't until I'd kind of given up on even getting a diagnosis. It was my senior year of college when I was a social work major at this time, and I got kicked out of the program more or less because of these noises, and they were a disturbance and a problem. And I ended up failing all of my classes, which was really hard for a straight A student, but can't graduate. What's the point of doing all this work when I had a bunch of other stuff going on? So my school had a really great program that said, if you fail all of your classes before you can register for the next semester, you have to do the school psychologist to make sure it doesn't happen again. And he's the one that pulled out the DSMV. We ticked off all four qualifications for Tourette syndrome, and I had a diagnosis.
Isn't that wild, eh? How that happens, and just getting in front of the right people. So my, I call it my previous life. In my previous life, I worked in children's mental health, so I know the DSM quite well. And I also know that life of bouncing from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor to try and getting the right answers. And how ironic that you saw everyone and then it became full circle and the right person was like, well, let's see what we can find. So talk to me about your parents and what was happening for them at this time and how they were feeling, or the people around you in general.
My parents were definitely the most concerned, and they were kind of the ones that asked me to see doctors in the first place. Again, I wasn't super concerned about it, but my parents were concerned. And so I'll see them to, like, I was an adult at this point, and so it was entirely my choice. Which again is super different, because when you're a child, like, you're going to get dragged wherever mom and dad drag you to, like, you're going to see these doctors, like it or not. But I was still willing to do that. And let's see, how old was I? I think I was 21 when I had this, like, sacred, profound experience in church with them. And that's, and explaining this to my parents, that's kind of where they went, okay, you know, if you're okay with this, this is something that we're not going to necessarily push anymore. And so that's why it took another 3 years, because there was about 3 years where I just didn't care. I wasn't seeing doctors. And it was outside circumstances that led me to that. They were very good and very supportive about it. Most people thought they were kind of cute, like, because it was just this little, it sounds like a dog squeaky toy at first. Like, it was just like, oh, that's a cute little noise. That's a cute little hiccup. Good job. Yeah. You know? So I was always surrounded by so much support. There really wasn't any negative experiences until I got kicked out of a college major that, first of all, really frustrated me, because I had to interview for that major in the first place. So I'd spent like a year and a half already in the program. You know, they knew about this. I don't see why they waited until I was in it, and it had wasted a year and a half of my college time and the money and all of that. Like, you knew if it was a problem, just say, sorry, we don't want you in the program.
Right. Right. So what happened? How did you navigate your diagnosis after, especially given since it never really bothered you?
Right. It was more just kind of, cool, I've got a diagnosis. But at the same time, I had missed the deadline for an internship in college. And so, it being my senior year, I decided instead to write a senior research paper where I took one entire semester on a topic of my choice. Hey, look, I'm diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. Let's do a deep dive study, partially because OCD tends to run hand in hand very often with Tourette's. And I definitely have some OCD. So I'm just like, I need to know all the things about it. I just got obsessed with it. I think everything that semester, like, all centered around Tourette syndrome in one way, shape, or form. It was kind of cool. But in this senior research paper, my major at this point was international cultural studies with an emphasis in communications. So I studied how Tourette syndrome affected communication, found some very cool stuff, very empowering and liberating. Like, I didn't really have a bad self-esteem before, but I just felt like I was able to step into this whole new level of being with understanding my Tourette syndrome in specific, but how that affects how I communicate with others and communication in general. Like, it was just so eye-opening and so empowering that it eventually became my first book, because my professors were so excited about it. And they said, there's nothing like this in the field. You got to get this published. And so I did.
And that's how Awkwardly Strong was born.
It is. That's it, it kind of morphed into a self-help version. Like, this is all of the cool things. Like, here's what I studied, but here are the results of that and how this can really be impactful when we apply it.
Mm-hmm. And I love that so much. And then Tragically Strong and Fearfully Strong came. So what are the basis of those novels?
So first of all, they're not novels. They're nonfiction.
As soon as I said it, I was like, that's wrong. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, that is incorrect. Those books.
Book person here, slightly obsessed. So, I mean, in case you couldn't tell. So after I published the first one, I mean, as you read in my bio, like, I've just always been a book person. And because I've always been like a book study person, like, I've never understood adrenaline junkies who are going to go do like these super crazy things. You know, I'm just happy with my little books in my own little world. But as soon as I hit publish on that book, I understood why adrenaline junkies do what they do. And I'm like, this is my life now. I can't do anything else. So that's when I decided to jump into becoming an author and into that process. And so I kind of thought, well, what else could I write about that is similar to this that would be able to help people? Because that's something, I mean, I love people. That's why I studied how we communicate. That's why I studied all these different things. And I realized, hey, I've been through a lot of hard things. People ask me all the time how I, once they learn more about me, how I'm able to still appear. I'm often called naive and innocent. You know, I don't know what's going on. And so I get kind of discredited. Without them realizing that I have been homeless, that I have been sexually, emotionally, and mentally abused, that I've lost 3 out of my 4 siblings, one of them to murder. Like, there's been a lot of stuff that I've experienced, but I still maintain this happy, upbeat, almost innocent persona, and like how I do that. So understanding how I dealt with all of this trauma that I've experienced in my life, I put that to paper and came up with Tragically Strong. Mm-hmm. Fearfully Strong, again, was kind of similar. I just realized I'm such a big chicken. I'm always so scared of everything. And I wanted to overcome that. And so I did another deep dive study and looking at, okay, what is fear? What's its purpose? How does it work? What benefits can I pull from it? Because at this point, that's what I do, is I find all of these things that are excuses, the things that hold us back, and twist them so that they can become tools that I utilize for me, not against me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've had a ton of trauma in your life, and more than most, for sure. Do you want to speak to that? How you navigated your own healing through that, those experiences? What worked for you? What are some of your coping strategies when it comes to your healing journey?
There have been so many different things. I think it does depend on the situation. At this point, a lot of it, thanks to my first book, I started taking this bull in a china shop approach to life. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so I've just tried a little bit of anything and everything. I saw our school psychologist for several years after getting a diagnosis with Tourette syndrome. Journaling as a writer has been huge for me, probably more beneficial than the therapist, although the therapist was kind of a good guide as far as the questions that I want to look at and the things that I want to analyze. With the brother that was murdered, that's a recent one. That was December of 2019. So, I mean, it's been a year and a half-ish. So I might still get a little sensitive about this topic.
Of course.
Sometimes it's just dumb luck, because honestly, the world shutting down was exactly what I needed after that. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to deal with people. I didn't want to face people. I just needed time alone, you know, and not everyone's going to get that opportunity. You kind of steal pockets where you can, but I got lucky enough that the world shut down for me. But that's when I also started getting in. I, I had a month where I was just like, I will try anything and everything because I can't handle these emotions anymore. This is too much. I started doing yoga for the first time. I started getting into energy work and crystals and tapping. Like, I didn't care what it was. I didn't care how off the wall it sounded. I was willing to try absolutely anything. And I think it's a combination because each little bit kind of chips away at that trauma. And so the fact that I was willing to try so many things, I was able to heal from so many different angles until I felt ready to jump back into the world and, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. Here's my next step. And then I just kind of take it one step at a time.
And I think grief's like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, unfortunately you have multiple grievances that you can pull from, but I don't think grief allow, I don't think it's linear. I think it's
not at all,
you know, a book or a song or a place or, you know, a memory comes up and it doesn't matter the amount of time it hits you. And, but I love that you said you were so open to everything. I mean, spiritual practices, I think they're so underrated for the world that doesn't use them, you know, they call it the woo woo, but it really can be, it was a pivotal part of my healing journey and my healing self-discovery or my self-discovery journey. And it's something that I still practice daily. Journaling is the greatest gift to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, it is without a shadow of doubt, the safest place for us to release because it's ours. Mm-hmm. Right. It's our personal emotions and our personal opinions and our personal thoughts. And we just get to go there, whatever it looks like, whatever it sounds like, however it feels, without fear of judgment, without fear of repercussion for our thoughts. And so I love that you said that you were able to adapt a variety of tools to help you navigate. And also, you must be an optimist because I too am an optimist. And I was like, the world shut down for me. I needed this. The rest of the world is like, what is happening? And then a handful of us are like, thank you, universe, for giving me exactly what it is that I needed at this time.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that speaks to your level of self-awareness of who you are and what you need and what your strategies are to be the best version of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think it definitely makes a difference. Again, having kind of this background of those three books and understanding that anything that we experience is a tool that we can utilize. And we don't want just one experience because a hammer is not going to build an entire house. You know, you need a variety of tools to help you reach whatever goal that's going to be to create the life that you want to live. Like you're going to need more than just your one go-to. Mm-hmm. While that is awesome and powerful, if you have something like that, because for me, I do, that's journaling. Journaling is my go-to, but it's not the only tool available. And it's kind of cool to see how some of these other things can create things that we never thought were possible or able to experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to speak to some of the wisdom you share in Fearfully Strong. A lot of us are so crippled by fear. A lot of my listeners are so crippled by fear that I would love for you to share some of what you learned and some of the pivotal moments in your journey where fear was no longer an obstacle.
And I wouldn't say it's no longer an obstacle. I mean, I've literally written a book and I found myself dealing with this morning, actually.
And when I say no longer an obstacle, it's more like a self-awareness of what's coming up for us versus a big brick wall we're not willing to find our way around.
So in my study of fear, a lot of times we have this physiological reaction where, you know, our heart speeds up, we get these butterflies in the tummy. I mean, the fear response is fight, flight, or freeze. But in any of those, there is a rush of adrenaline to cause those reactions. But what else causes adrenaline? Things that we're excited about. The thing is with fear is that we don't know the outcome and we can't guarantee it. And so, but essentially it's the same thing. It's fear and excitement. And a lot of it is, okay, I'm afraid. What is there that I could be excited? What are the possibilities? Instead of looking at all the things that could go wrong. So when I have that, I kind of sit and, you know, okay, why am I so afraid? What instead could I look at the excitement and try and turn that into excitement? So my book launched this week. My fourth book came out, and it's always scary because you just don't know how people are going to take. I can do all of the podcasts. I can do all of the press releases. I can, you know, have all of these events for book signings. I can put all of this effort, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee sales. Like it doesn't necessarily guarantee that the payout's going to equal the effort that I put in. And it was terrifying to not know and have that financial security, because back in June, I actually quit the corporate world. I quit having a job and I am fully self-employed. So I needed this book to be a success. And for me, I am someone who is spiritual. I do believe in God, call it the universe, call it source, whatever you want, same verbiage. But I also recognized that while I don't know the outcome, God does, the universe does, and it's not in my hands. And so it kind of gives me a chance to, okay, do I really trust God? Which it took a minute. Like, yeah, I do. Sometimes it does take a minute to remind myself I do. I promise I do. Let's like get centered and reconnect with that idea. And let go of the fear aspect, the unknown aspect, because it is known, just not by me. And whatever happens, I then turn it into a tool. I mean, this book that I launched this week is all of the stuff that I did wrong publishing the first three. Sales weren't what I wanted the first three. It wasn't like I could, oh, great, I'm now a millionaire and I can quit my job after my first book. No, that's not how it works. There was a lot of growth and learning, and it was a process. And so trusting God that it will all work out one way or the other. But there's always going to be that experience, and I'm going to find new tools that I can then utilize in that toolkit of mine.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. It's first of all, surrender, surrender, and surrender some more. Mm-hmm. We have actually, as human beings, okay, this is going to be a mic drop for the listeners. We have actually as human beings, never quite actually controlled our way into or out of anything in the exact way we attempted. Control gets you not the outcome that you push for. Surrender gives you the outcome you didn't know you needed. And so, or you didn't know was coming, or you allow the possibility for so much better. Right. And so I love that you said that you have to surrender and trust, put your trust in your faith. That's really, you know, what our spiritual connections are, is trusting in something bigger than ourselves and knowing we're supported every step of the way. And it's terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
You know, every time you put something into the world, you have to remind, as entrepreneurs, we have to remind ourselves, like, the outcome is not my responsibility. You know, I do what I can. I put my heart and my soul into my work, and the outcome is not, it's not in my control. And so I can just do what I can and know that, that it's going to be okay. No matter what happens, it's going to be okay. And I also loved how you said finding a way to turn your fear into excitement. This is a process that I teach all the time. You know, everybody says, what if? And they'll be like, what if I fail? Or what if people hate me? Or what if this, what if that? And I'm like, and what if they love you? And what if it works? If when we're able to find the excitement, in your words, right? Find the excitement. In my words, it's like, find the joy, find the best mm-hmm. case scenario, put your energy into the limitless possibility for your life. And the more you focus on the limitless possibility and show up as if it's already yours, the more it is.
Mm-hmm.
The easier for sure. it is to surrender, the easier it is to trust. And yeah, I mean, we can only succeed from a place of trust, in my mm-hmm. experience anyways. It's the
I kind of want to backtrack just a little bit when we were talking about the control, because it's funny, that is something that I did address in my first book, because having Tourette syndrome, I literally cannot control what comes out of my mouth. I literally can't control what my body does. I don't know if you saw a couple minutes ago, I did this like that was a tick. Like my body just like grabs me and I'm just like, oh, hi, here we go. You know, I literally can't control my body. I literally can't control what comes out of my mouth. And so part of what I found was I don't have that control, and that's okay. Because what I can control is what happens after. Mm-hmm. There are certain aspects that we do have control of. So we don't feel like, you know, we're just floating in a lifeboat in this huge ocean. We do have some control, but we don't have control of what we would like to have control of. So it's recognizing, okay, I don't have control of that. I do have control of this. How do I use it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. I just mean, as women, we tend to control every little piece of every little thing of every little right. person of every little place sure. in our life.
For sure.
And then we're like, I don't understand why we're so resentful and disappointed. And I'm like, well,
well, because what I'm saying is that we tend to flip it. Like yeah. we tend to think that our lives are out of control when really our lives are the one thing that we really can control with our choices. And, you know, being aware of what we can control, we need to flip that. We can't control what's out there, but we can't control what's in here. We don't yeah. react and respond to what's out there. You know, that's entirely up to us. That's part of the being centered. That's part of the healing process, I think, in my mind, but also recognizing that to have that control here, you have to let go of what's out there.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Right. It's like that when I say do what you can, I mean, in terms of our business and our launches and the things that are exciting, we have to take action on the things that we want. We have to be in control of our launch strategy and our marketing strategy. And there are pieces that control is necessary. But just like you said, that's an internal game. We're in control mm-hmm. of our responses to the world. We're in control of the thoughts we choose to hang on to, right? Mm-hmm. We can't control our thoughts, but we can certainly control the ones we choose to hyper-focus on. And then we also are in control of, you know, how, like you said, how we respond to the world, how we show up for our dreams, but we have to learn to release control around outcomes and how other people, you know, respond to us, AKA whether or not someone buys your book, AKA whether or not someone enrolls in my programs. It's like, I trust that as an entrepreneur, I have done everything that I can. And you know that you wrote this book with everything you had. And it's like, I know there's greatness in here and I trust that it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I believe that it is, because mm-hmm. I think you have just so much wisdom inside of you and so much amazing. I love the combination of the research and then your experience, right? I think there's so mm-hmm. many people who need that like tangibility and that logic behind the research. Mm-hmm. And so I love that all of your books offer that, your experience and your story. And so it has an emotional component, which we all mm-hmm. need. And it also has the logic and the research and the truth, the scientific evidence to back up what you're saying. And I mean, also they're just like, I'm obsessed with the titles. I know I said that at the beginning, but like, you know, what gets me when I read books, titles.
Right.
Period. Right. I'm like, you have to pull me in with the title. Cause if not, I'm like, oh, that might be nice. Then it has to be a book that was recommended to me. But if I was walking through a bookstore and saw any one of your books, I would pick it up.
Thanks.
So you have launched the last one, but tell me where everybody can get them. Like, we have a lot of Canadian audience. We have a lot of American audience. Where can they get their hands on your book?
I know that you can get it for sure on Amazon, but like I said, with this jumping in bowl in a china shop, I am experimenting with something new. I tried a book company called Ingram Spark, which is who book companies use. That's where like Barnes and Nobles is going to stock their books from. That's where a lot of indie bookshops, like they stock from Ingram Spark. I'm just not entirely sure how that process works yet, because this is my first time doing it, but I can guarantee it's on Amazon.
Perfect. And we'll make sure that's the best way anyways, for like immediate push out. Right. So we will make sure that those links are in the bio of the show notes, or in the show notes, in the bio of the show notes. What does that even mean? that the links are in the show notes. If you could leave our listeners with, I mean, I know for certain that there are quite a few people on here who are aspiring writers. I know there are. I get people in my network all the time being like, how'd you write your book? And I'm like, I just wrote my book. Just write. Just get your ideas out. But I would love for you to share, as a four-time published author, what would you say to anyone who has a strong desire to write a book?
Honestly, the writing is key. I felt comfortable and confident because I've been journaling since I was 8 years old. Like, writing is just kind of what I do. Nonfiction is so much easier than fiction. I am actually starting to write a fiction novel, whole different ballpark, totally different process, because I have ideas and it's a lot of organization. But fun fact, that's a strength that women have. Like, we have a gift for organization. And that's something that I found, even with my nonfiction, I start with an outline and then I just kind of fill in the gaps. Like, okay, here are the points I want to address. Here are some subtopics, you know, expand it a little because I talk a lot and I get wordy. But similar with fiction as well. Figure out the organization of it. You don't want to just be writing a story and then have nowhere to go all of a sudden.
It's so true. And I am going to ask you this because I don't get very many chances to talk to other authors. And this is like a question I get all the time. But I'm curious to know your answer. How many words should be in a nonfiction book? I get this all the time.
It will depend on your audience. Yeah. Most of my books, actually all of my books thus far, are actually very short. They're about 25,000 words, which is about 100 pages. But if you keep in mind that my first book was to an audience of people with Tourette syndrome, some OCD, maybe some ADHD is also common. In fact, goes hand in hand with that. We got shorter attention spans. Mm-hmm. We don't want a super long book because, even with it only being 100 pages, I can't tell you how many people, I'm about halfway, and then they just get stuck. It's as long or as short as you need to tell your story. I actually have a friend who's a writer, and she wrote this. It's almost like a parable type thing. It's only like 10 pages. It's actually more of a glorified gift card is what she calls it.
Wow.
But it sells because she prices them like gift cards. But that's all she needed to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Whatever you need to tell your story. And it's so true, because I remember when I first started writing my book, I would like literally be Googling this question all the time. Do I have enough? How many words do I need? Okay. If it says that I need 35,000, how do I divide that into 10 chapters? How many words per chapter? And you just get stuck, right? The logical brain gets in.
Don't do that.
And I don't do that. That's where writer's block comes from, my friends. When you get so tied up in all of the, the shoulds. And so I stopped doing that. But I love to ask that question because I get it in my inbox all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm curious what another author would say. And you said the same thing as I said. I'm like, Google is not your friend. And also just tell your story, just start writing and tell your story. Well, Paula, I'm so grateful that you were here and that you shared your story with us. I can't wait for my community to be able to get their hands on your books. And I'm so grateful that you were here to just share your truth. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens for you with this book and all of the future books.
Thank you so much. I'm excited as well. Thank you so much for having me. I love what you do. I love following you. You're great.
Thank you so much. Now I'm going to blush. I appreciate that so much. I appreciate the work that you do. I appreciate that you are here, and I can't wait for us to stay connected. Thank you. Our listeners, I hope you love yourself fiercely and fully today and every day. I will see you on the next episode.